standing by. Over.
Jeremy and Joe starts now.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
Hello, Houston. He's Joe. I'm Jeremy. It's Jeremy and Joe. Brian's back, by the way. He was gone 2 days, Brian was. It's good to have you back, Brian. Wish we could say we missed you.
I expected that from you today.
Did you really spend 2 days celebrating your birthday? Is that why you left? Happy birthday.
I spent 2 days not doing work and watching movies. I don't know if it was necessarily celebrating my birthday, but it was not being at work.
That makes sense.
That tracks.
He's jamming.
I love the song.
You want me to leave this on? I could just replay it. We could come in every set break with it.
I never knew what the song was until the other day. I can't get enough of it. I feel like I'm a WWE diva.
Yeah, I mean, that is a great comp for this song.
If you were a diva, like that's why they got rid of the
diva's title.
Yeah, that's what, I think you were the reason why they got rid of it. If you're a part of that group,
yeah, I feel like I'm a one wrestler whenever I hear this. It's like it's kind of like Ronda Rousey.
So you're the third Bella twin.
Yeah, Jeremy
sister.
Bella. What do you think the B stands for? Astros lineup's out. No, you were on. Yeah, we'll get to a bunch of stuff today. We got a bunch of stuff we're doing today. The Texans' offense is bad still. Cash trash, NFL overreactions. We have a star-studded guest list today. Star-studded. D'Amico Ryans.
Ooh.
We'll hear from him on the show.
Okay.
Mita Kimes.
Big fan.
Will join us. Dan Orlovsky, former Houston Texan quarterback, will join us.
Good. Stay in the end zone.
Maybe Rich Eisen will join us. We'll see. We have him on hold. We'll let him know. But yeah, star-studded today. Astros won a baseball game yesterday, 6-5. We'll get to that in just a moment. But today's lineup, pretty similar. Peña Correa Altuve, Walker Caratini Yiner, Sanchez Myers Cole. So Cole does get moved down against DeGrom. But yeah, I think that's the same nine that started yesterday's game, if memory serves. Because Yiner and Caratini were both in the lineup, but Yiner was DHing, Caratini was catching. Yeah, I think this is the same nine.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is for now with no Yordan Alvarez for the foreseeable future. I love watching Zach Cole play. I like him having it there in the ninth spot there, another lefty bat at the bottom of the order. Jesus Sanchez, I know you talked about yesterday having him in the ninth spot. I like that as well, like the way you kind of flip a game at the bottom there. But I think this is your group, Jeremy. Like, besides maybe Dubon occasionally.
Yeah, it depends on who's pitching.
Or Cam Smith, obviously, instead of Sanchez.
I think if Fromber or Hunter Brown pitch and you don't have Yordan, I think Altuve's DHing. And I think Urias or Dubon are playing second because, you know, ground balls, those guys throw mm-hmm. them. And you want your better infield defense. Now, I did hear the Astros general manager. His name's Dana Brown.
It is.
He was on with the flagship in the morning every Wednesday. I was listening to it. In the parking lot just outside. I didn't want to come inside and see you guys too early. So I listened to it in the truck. And my favorite thing was, he goes, I think we're talking about Esau coming back for the Seattle series. Like, you think that you're talking about it? You're the GM. Like, you tell me.
Are you talking about it?
He goes, I think we're talking about it. Which, whatever. Like, I know I'm nitpicking here. But maybe he'll be back against Seattle. Maybe he's your DH.
Should we just add a week on at least to any Dana projection on health?
I think we
start on adding a week on.
I don't know. It's so weird because he was like, I think we're talking about it. He was like, it's kind of like far-fetched or something like that, but we think we're talking about it, and we could go DH off day, DH off day. So I don't know.
While we were waiting for Yordan to come back, he had some projection like late July that he was going to be back about 2 weeks before he actually came back, or at least 2 weeks before that.
No, he usually misses his target he's usually very aggressive, but feels like this one's close.
It feels like we're going to see him back before the end of the regular season, which is important. Like, if he's going to be a factor in the playoff roster, if you're going to have him DH in the playoffs, and if you can get past the wild card round, in which you basically are playing every other day for the most part in these series, then you can pretty much pencil in Isak Paredes into your lineup. I don't think the first at bat you want him taking since his return from injury is in game one of a wild card series. So you'd like him to be back in some capacity, I think, before.
I mean, I'd like to see what he looks like, you know? Like, if this is like the hamstring muscles hanging on by a thread, like, I want to see what he looks like in the box. Like, is he grimacing? Is he laboring to first base? Like, I'm very curious selfishly, not that it's tangible at all, what it looks like.
But I would hope not, if he's, because he is under contract. So, you know, you don't, yes, you want him back for this push. It'd be nice to have him, but there is some long-term ramifications. So if he's grimacing out of the box, then I don't want to see Isak Paredes on this team in the playoffs, because if he re-injures himself and then is out for most of next season because he actually has to have this surgery that they were considering before, is it really – is the juice worth the squeeze?
Yeah, for the playoffs, I think it is. I think it's worth squeezing whatever you can out of that Mexican hamstring.
And you do have a lot of infielders for the next season. I mean, you do have an extra group of guys. Like, where's Isak Paredes going to play if everyone's healthy next year? So I guess if he was hurt.
What would you do? I mean, I already have my offseason plan lined up.
I'm trading Christian Walker and playing Isak Paredes at first base.
Bingo. And what are you doing with the $20 million?
Of Walker's?
Yeah.
Eating as much of it as I can for a low-level prospect.
Oh, I think you might be able to trade him. Like, I don't know if you have to retain money for Walker. Like, it's $20 million for two more years. Like, I don't know if that would take the Astros just biting the bullet and like, okay, we're gonna eat some of the salary. I actually think you could trade Walker for, you know, air. Like nothing really of substance, like a low A flyer at best, or that an organization doesn't care about. I do think that you can get out of Walker's money without attaching anything of significance with it. I think somebody will take it on.
I wonder, would you be open to the idea of taking on because of what the Astros can do with starting pitching?
Uh-huh.
Would you be open to taking on a contract that another team is not thrilled about?
No, not really. I'd rather
if it was only for one more year, like a starting pitcher that you feel, okay, maybe our analytics say that this guy can get things going if we work with him and we work with what he does best, like they did with Kikuchi and things like that.
That might be the line. Like, yeah. You better like the arm.
Yeah. Don't trade him for, like, you're not trading for Lance McCullers, you know, a healthy Lance McCullers. You're trading him for something that you believe that you can fix and you're going one bad contract out for one bad contract in.
You better believe in the arm. Because, like, what I want them to do is I want them to trade Christian Walker for a bucket of curveballs, and you repurpose the $20 million on pitching. So in you know, reality, it's pretty much the same thing. Mm-hmm. It's an arm that you like. Now, I'm not 100% convinced that pitching has to be starting pitching. I don't know. Like, I don't know. We'll talk about that in the offseason, though. There's 10 days of baseball left, mm-hmm. and the Astros got to win. It's baseball time in Texas, and the Astros are ready to play for the Silver Boot tonight.
It's always fun to win.
Now, who cares about the tiebreaker?
It's all about the
Silver Boot tonight between the Astros and the Rangers. And the Silver Boot is in play because the Astros won a baseball game yesterday. Beat the Rangers 6-5. They jumped out 6-0 after 4, which is like, yeah, cruise to victory. Game 3 tomorrow. They made it a little bit nervous, Nelly. They made Coffee nervous there in the 8th and the 9th inning. But a good win, a little bit of cushion. The Guardians have actually jumped the Rangers, by the way, in the wild card race. But you have a chance, I think, and I know that mathematically, but the Astros have a chance today with a victory to deliver a Terrence Crawford haymaker and knock the Rangers out of the playoff race.
Especially with Jacob DeGrom on the mound.
He's on the mound.
I mean, he's been incredible this year at 2.82 ERA. His whip is a .92.
Yikes.
This season, he's been electric and healthy. If you can beat him today, it really does feel like a death blow to the Texas Rangers at this point. And the Guardians are playing better baseball, and like the Rangers had their opportunity to gain ground on the Astros, to gain ground on the Mariners. They didn't really do it. So it'd be nice to get the Silver Boot. They've won it every year since 2017. Don't want to lose that. It matters to some people, not to everyone, but it does matter to some people. And if you can knock the Rangers out of the playoffs, it's a little extra enjoyable. And again, you're right. The math doesn't math that way, but getting swept by the Astros would feel demoralizing for the Rangers, especially because they just swept the Brewers last week.
I mean, the Rangers would be 5 games back of the Astros and would not have the tiebreaker. The Astros would have, so it's basically a 6-game, it's 5.5 game lead, because the tiebreaker's worth a half a game, because they have to surpass you. They have to completely overtake you. There's no game 163 anymore. So the tiebreaker's big. Like, it's worth a half game in the standings. AJ Blueball was, I mean, I guess the opener yesterday, went 3 innings. He was nuts. He struck out 7 dudes in 3 innings. I'm starting to fall in love with AJ Blueball.
I don't blame you.
Starting to fall in love with him.
He's got the goods.
He does.
He looks like someone, okay, think about the future of the Astros, and you think about next year and what the rotation is going to look like. There is a level of excitement with Blueball. We talk all the time about all these back-of-the-end-of-rotation quality guys the Astros have. I don't think Blueball is right now in that conversation for a front of the rotation, but he's definitely in the middle of the pack.
Yeah, see, I was wondering, like, this year he's going to kind of be like your floater. Like, if you need like a game four starter, like, he might be it, depending on Javier, depending on Costanza's next starter too. But probably like that multi-inning reliever, maybe like, you know, he pitches the fifth and the sixth or the fourth and the fifth. Or maybe you use him as like a leverage arm in the seventh. I don't know. But I do wonder if they view him as a starter going forward. Like, next year, is he a starter or is he a leverage reliever for you?
Should be a starter.
I think so. Like, I would rather groom him as a starter. And then if, like, hey, midpoint next season, he's got an ERA of 5. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's repackage him. Let's repurpose what we're going to do with A.J. Blue Ball. I think they should open next year with him as a starter.
I mean, let's say Danny Brown for the third straight offseason pretty much does nothing in the offseason in terms of starting pitching. Got Hunter Brown, Jason Alexander, Christian Javier. What else is behind that?
We don't know about Luis.
We don't know about Luis. We don't know about Colton Gordon. We don't know about Brandon Walter. We don't know about Ronald Blanco. We don't know about Hayden Wesneski. I guess Lance McCullers?
I mean, he'll be around.
He'll be around.
He'll have a tough time making the opening day roster.
But so Blue Ball's the next guy, and he's probably in front of Christian Javier. Right,
I feel like we're missing some names here.
Are we?
Yeah, I think so. Hunter Brown, Alexander, Christian Javier. You currently have Blue Ball. Guys that are coming off injury, don't know about Garcia, don't know about McCullers. Brandon Walter's having surgery, so I don't think that sounds good. Arrighetti.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, Spencer Arrighetti. Ronel Blanco won't be ready for opening day. Wesneski probably won't be ready for opening day. You have Miguel Ulloa. Like, is he a big leaguer next year?
He could factor in.
That Ethan Pecco guy is kind of interesting, too.
Who the is that guy?
You wouldn't know, casual. You wouldn't know. Yeah, I mean, but again, like, none of those names are moving me off the fact that I'm starting A.J. Blue Ball as a starter at, you know, the beginning of next season. Mm-hmm. Opening day next season, he's being lengthened out, stretched out to be a starter. I was messing with Baseball Savant today. His arsenal is, like, pretty nice. His fastball, 93, 94. Can touch 98. We've seen that. Didn't do that yesterday. He also induced vertical break. How much do you like induced vertical break? I'm a big induced vertical break guy.
Sounds great.
Christian Javier's the that's the whole invisible thing. Christian Javier, like, invented, at least in Houston, the induced vertical break, which is around 2021 when it's going well. A.J. Blue Ball's touching 21 on the IVB, on the old IVB. He's touching 21 on his sweeper, an average horizontal break of 17 inches. He hit 21 inches. Anything 20 or above is excellent, is phenomenal. He's got a changeup that goes the other way. 18 inches horizontally, touching up to 20 inches. I like the dude's stuff. He's actually got 4 pitches, but he's a 3-pitch mix. I like me some A.J. Blue Ball. Sorry that I pay attention to the sport, Joe.
No, I'm just a really nerdy 90 seconds.
You're just a nerd.
I openly admit this. Yeah, I try not to let it come out very often. I try to closet my nerdness a lot of the time.
He's got a nerdgasm going for A.J. Blue Ball.
Yeah, I try to keep my nerd in the closet, and I do a pretty dang good job of that. But A.J. Blue Ball brought it out of me. I'm out of the closet, the nerd one, for A.J. Blue Ball.
Seems like you're all bricked up for A.J. Blue Ball.
Clip that, thank you. Look, he's...
It got hot in here.
It is hot in here. We can turn the AC on. He's got the goods.
He is
exciting to watch on the mound. And what I'm curious about is the 96, 97, 98. Like, he's touching it occasionally.
Yeah.
Is that something that in a full offseason... Like, really plan that. Like, can that really be part of his game?
It depends on what role. I think if he's a reliever, I think he can hit that consistently.
But he's more between like, I think, the 93 to 95 and occasionally.
I think
really
as a starter. I think as a starter, he's sitting 93, 94. Maybe you can get him to mid 90s, which if you're sitting 95, that's pretty dang good.
Yeah, I mean, you're sitting 94. It's great.
Especially if you got a little invisi to it. You get the IVB kicking up. I mean, I like his stuff. He's like grounding in the outfield. Did you read Rome's story today where, like, before every series, he takes off his shoes and, like, walks around the warning track?
That's why you like him
so he's
so much.
Grounding. He's one with nature. He's a devout Christian, wears number 69. Like, he's an interesting guy, A.J. Blue Ball.
I don't know.
He's an interesting guy.
That sentence is very strange.
That's what makes him interesting. Yeah. I don't know. Like, he's two people, I think.
He's
a starter. He's a reliever. I mean, he's hard to figure out.
Christian can't like the number 69?
It's odd.
It's just the number.
It's just the number. Okay. What are you implying?
Once you know exactly what is being implied.
He's Horn Dog Branham.
Yeah. No, I'm just pointing out that's the number he wears, and it's kind of contradictory
to
some of the other stuff.
He's a nobody when he made the roster, so he just gets whatever number is left over.
With the last name Blue Ball, you think that's what happened?
He'll get a real number next year.
Yeah, this is it. This is his number.
Disagree. I bet you.
You think they just assigned him this?
Yes.
I think they stay away from assigning people that number.
I think they're like, hey, there's a couple options here. Do you want like 74?
No, he picked that number.
69.
He grounds in the outfield. He picked that number. He's got an IVB of 21. He picked that number.
We'll see.
AJ Blueball did.
Kyle Tucker changed his number.
What was he?
He was 3.
That's a lot different.
3 to 30.
Usually they give you, I mean, you're right. Like when you're a nobody that makes the team, usually in spring training though, usually whenever you're on the big league team, you're going to have a pick.
He'll
like
they're not just options.
They're not just assigning you a number whenever you join the big league team. They assign you number in spring training when you're a minor league invite. It's so different. So different.
He could wear 43 next year.
He's not going to wear 43.
He's going to start listing some random numbers.
That's not a random number. That's Mocha. That's Mocha McCullers' number.
Oh, my
bad.
He
could wear 59.
I've completely forgot what Lance's numbers was.
Yeah. There'll be options.
He's not changing. This is him. This is his identity for the rest of his life.
You want one for Christmas?
Huh? No, I don't. Why not? I don't want that jersey.
Your jersey?
I'm not a Blue Ball 69 jersey?
I'm not a jersey guy.
What about jersey?
The only jersey I have, actually I have more than one, but my favorite jersey is my Case Keenum jersey.
Shocker.
My Texans Case Keenum. Greatest quarterback
statistic. Oh, it's not even a Cougs Case Keenum jersey?
No, my uncle gave it to me. My Theo Pete gave it to me.
I'm surprised you don't have like a ton of Cougs jerseys.
I don't mind a jersey guy.
I really don't have many jerseys. Like
no, I'm not. The only jerseys I have are ones that were given to me. I was given a Case Keenum jersey. I was given a Shane Battier jersey. I think that was from my cousin John. And then I have like the Space Cowboy jersey they give you.
Oh yeah.
I feel like I have another one. Maybe another Space Cowboy ones actually.
They've given us a couple.
I think I have an XFL jersey.
Wow.
From which generation?
The last time Moose Johnston. I guess it was the merger actually.
Oh okay.
Remember he brought us jerseys?
Yeah, I think so.
The Moose. Daryl Johnston?
It's a classic now. Mm-hmm. Doesn't even exist anymore.
It doesn't even exist anymore.
We got no Sabercats. We got no Roughnecks. We're losing teams left and right.
Comets are dead. Arrows are gone.
Yeah.
This is Houston's where minor league sports go to die. Sugarland, they exist. Houston, not so much.
But the Skeeters, they died.
They did die.
Independent organization, gone.
They did die. This doesn't bode well for the Dash, I don't think.
They're professional.
We'll see. All right, 713-780-ESPN. We'll touch some of the other stuff in this baseball game, too. How about the bullpen? How about the offense? How about them not scoring runs after the fourth inning, too? That's kind of annoying. Lots to get to. We have a star-studded guest list today. You're going to hear from Dan Orlovsky, Mina Kimes, D'Amico Ryans, maybe more. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. But a star-studded A-list group coming up a little bit later. 713-780-3776, the HRP listener line. We're on YouTube at ESPN Houston. We're on Twitter at ESPN 975. Joe's at Joe George Radio. Brian's at Sacked by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. We are Jeremy and Joe on ESPN 975 and ESPN 925. You know what I love to do? I love to play on underdog, whatever it is, whether it's the drafts. You know, I love those. The ladders, the streaks. They are so much fun. All of these team picks now on underdog. Player picks. It is great. Football is hot and heavy. It already is. And underdog is the place to make all your picks and win all your money all season long. Playing on underdog is easy. Pick whether your favorite players would go higher or lower on stats like touchdowns, yards, interceptions, and more. Also new to underdog, you can pick teams. You can pick whether or not your team will win or lose. That is right. Get your picks right. You can win up to 5,000 times your cash, and you can play with as little as $1. Tonight, underdog has profit boost on Major League Baseball. How about a little FIFA Champions League getting started? And even some WNBA. It's not too early to look ahead, though, to a little Thursday night football. Buffalo and Miami. How do you feel about these? James Cook, rush yards, higher or lower, 67.5. Josh Allen, higher or lower, 234.5 passing yards. Maybe you're liking Tyreek Hill. 65.5 receiving yards. You like the higher or the lower there? That's how easy it is. Go in here, pick higher, pick lower, and you could win a lot of money. So much to play, so much fun to be had, and so much money to win. You still have the originals with underdog, too. Mention the draft. You can draft right now. You can do second quarter best ball NFL drafts right now. Might have done a draft or two. The ladders are going on. The streaks are going on. So download the app today. Sign up with promo code KILLERB to score $50 in bonus funds when you play your first $5. Promo code KILLERB, K-I-L-L-E-R-B. Millions of fans have already won billions making picks on Underdog. Will you be next? Underdog, make picks, win money.
Must be 18 or older and present in Texas. Terms apply. See assets.underdogfantasy.com/web/play and get terms underscore DFS underscore .html for details. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit ncpgambling.org.
Listen to ESPN 97.5 and HD 97.9 HD2.
This is Jeremy and Joe
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
He's Joe, I'm Jeremy. We are Jeremy and Joe. Texter says, Jeremy, who is this bum on with you?
Oh, he loves me.
It's Joe.
That's who is Texter?
How do you know?
He used to text Paul and I a lot. So he's a huge fan of me.
I don't remember numbers like that. I think the only one I remember is Israel, but it's because his is, like, different.
Yeah,
I think he has a different area code, maybe. Israel, text in so I can remember how I recognize you. It has nothing to do with the emojis or your allegiances. It has everything to do with your area code. 713-780-3776. Texture, when my wife walked by the TV the last time AJ Blue Ball pitched and they said his name, she heard stuff, and then she almost peed herself when I told her he wore the number that he wears. Says the texter. It's not an accident.
Just a quick bad take boulevard here for Jeremy prematurely. You said you were going to read everything verbatim.
Yeah, there's certain things I will not read.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. This is a clean show, Joe.
I'm just saying.
It's a family-friendly show. We have good family fun with Jeremy and Joe.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
There's certain things I will not read. It's mostly the gaffes that they make. I'm no longer going to guess those. A texture-induced vertical break sounds like a WWE finisher. It is for AJ Blue Bull. That's his finishing move, the induced vertical break. AJ Blue Bull's finisher. Vertical break, baby.
Two segments in, two wrestling references. Yeah. We're on good track for the show today.
Or diva music to start our show.
Yeah. We got two segments down, you know, 10 more to go.
What do y'all think about our minor league system? Our guy, Ethan Frey. Is it Frey? Oh, it's Fry. It's Fry. It's pronounced Fry. This is the dude that they drafted at LSU. He said he looks like the real deal. I mean, he's crushing, like, advanced A pitching. I'm not going to oversell that, but I'm excited about his potential. Good athlete that only DH'd at LSU because they have other good athletes, but it looks like he has the tools. We'll see. We'll see how it all pans out. I'm not gonna go nuts over his advanced A-ball numbers though.
But Dana Brown he's aggressive. I mean, he moves guys quickly, so it does feel like we have to kind of pay attention to what's happening in the minors during the season now, because if someone's really popping, Dana Brown's gonna move that kid through the organization as fast as humanly possible.
Yep,
he did it with Bloss. He did it with Cole. He did with Lo Profito, honestly, in a lot of ways.
No, he's not bashful to advance a guy. I was shocked that he did it with Zach Cole. Yeah, Cam Smith.
Forgot about Cam Smith.
For better or worse. No, I mean, he's had a good rookie year. I just wish they would have manipulated his service time. I wish he would have spent 3 weeks in Sugarland this year at any point. That way they could gain an extra year of control. I mean, theoretically, they can do it in the future. They can do it next year. But it's probably less likely to do it next year.
Got lucky last night.
Cam?
Yeah. He got real lucky last night.
That was not a smart play. He got no. That was very, very good. Texture, Blue Ball is not a gym. He's a family jewel. Do you guys get my text? Just seeing if this is ESPN and I have the right number. No, we don't get your text, 1524. We don't get it. At least nothing good has come from this number. 713-780-3776. I thought the bullpen was mostly good last night. Obviously, Yael De Los Santos is the exception here. Although he could have been out of the eighth inning if Zach Cole makes a play. Why are we go cooging and yell De Los Santos? De Los Santos didn't go to university in America.
I thought I heard Nick. Don't know why.
He thought he said Nick Martinez.
Yeah. You thought De Los Santos and Martinez were the same?
I don't know how I mixed them up.
Gringo. Go back to what you were doing.
And I'm Mexico.
But the bullpen, other than De Los Santos, that was good. Abreu gave up some hits. He made a sweat, but he's so nasty.
Yeah, he looked awesome. And you need him to get, what, four outs? And
four outs.
Got it done. It was a little bad last week.
Yeah.
But then he's put it back together. And this is where, you know, going to the postseason, it feels like you're going to need him to do things like this more often. He's going to be asked to get three outs more often than not, it feels like, in the postseason.
Yeah. The if you allow me to take my nerd out of my closet again, the 15 highest velo pitches yesterday, or actually it was the 15 highest spin rate pitches, came from Brian Abreu. He was hitting over 3,100 last night, which we know, us in the nerd community, that anything above 3,000 is elite. He was getting to 3,100 on four or five of his pitches. He had the top 15 spin rates in last night's game. He also had 10 of the 12 highest velos in last night's game, Brian Abreu. The dude, man, it's a long way of saying he is flat out filthy.
He's nasty.
He's flat out filthy.
Yeah, you could just say that, or you could, you know, super nerd out.
Hey, some people appreciate it.
Yeah.
Some people appreciate it. Jaden Murray, I like.
I like him too, actually. Like,
his stuff is actually pretty good.
He feels like he can be a contributor for this team as well in the playoffs.
I also think he is penciled into a relief, like a bullpen spot on this team next year. Jaden Murray, opening day next year, assuming health, will be in the opening day bullpen. Making my claim now.
Yeah, him, Blue Ball have earned their spots on this roster next season.
I don't love Colton Gordon. I don't want him starting games, but I don't hate Colton Gordon and the Brandon Belak. Hey, if I need somebody to go give me 3-4 innings to finish a game, to mop up a game, I kind of like him in that role. Just, hey, I can count on you to give me 3-4 innings. You're not going to like pee all over your leg. It's not going to be great, but it's going to be 3 or 4 innings. You're going to do the job. I like him in that role. I think he can actually be the 13th pitcher on next year's staff, too.
So you think you're comfortable with him in that role if they're up, you know, 4?
He's my mop-up guy.
Okay.
4, it kind of depends on the state of the bullpen. I'm thinking more like down 4 or more. Up 5 or more. Like the Brandon Belak role from a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Where you're going to throw 200 pitches a week, and you're going to take it on the chin, because if you're not willing to do that, you're not going to be in the big leagues. I want Colton Gordon to be my 200 pitches a week guy that I go to whenever the game's out of hand. I think he's good in that role. That is his role. It's his only role, really.
Yeah, I think it's acceptable. I mean, he's given up, you know, 3, 4, 6 earned runs in all of his appearances besides last night. So he does get touched up a little bit. So you're probably right. Only really in a situation in which you're down a lot of runs, specifically in the playoffs. Like, you don't want to burn, you know, you're in a 3-game series in the wild card round. You're down 4 runs and you're just going to kind of throw in the towel and focus on the next day. He's the guy to get you until the game is over. And if he gives up 10 more runs, then, well, he gives up 10 more runs.
And he might be a casualty of the playoff roster because, like, more days off. Like, you're not really anticipating that as much. But I like him. I like him on the opening day bullpen next year, just as a guy that eats all of my innings. Offense, they were good in the first 4 innings, and then they went quiet, which annoys me. I hate how the Astros do this, where, like, they go nuts, and then they go quiet, and then they allow the other team to get back in the game. It'd be kind of nice if, you know, foot on the gas, go win a 10-1 laugher, don't use Brian Abreu so you can have him for the rubber game of the silver glove boot, whatever they call that thing, tonight. Which, I mean, I didn't love that the offense took their foot off the gas.
Well, I mean, it's and typically, like, if you put up a 4 spot, it feels like it's earlier in the game, even when they got it in the 4th inning, because pitchers aren't at their best. We all know that in the first and second inning of a game. They take time to get established a little bit, but you got to Merrill Kelly, which they haven't done earlier this season. So it is positive. And even though I do generally agree with you, it should have been enough to not bring in Brian Abreu.
No, it should have been. And don't blow up and yell De Los Santos go Cougs. And you're right. You would have been able to avoid that.
I think he's an honorary Coug now.
It might be. We'll take him. We're a diverse university. The bats have looked better, though. Like, the offense is looking better than it had the previous 3 weeks.
Altuve, specifically.
Yeah. He is looking like he's turning the corner a little bit. You're doing it without Yordan. Hopefully you get Yordan back. So that's cool. Alex on the Twitch, what are you doing with Barista Boy? Obviously, he means Mocha McCullers.
Next year?
Yeah. That's what he's asking.
I don't think there should even be a conversation. I know, like, in Chandler Rome's article on The Athletic, he talked about how he's going to have an opportunity to be part of this team next year, and he might have to by default, but I think the Astros organization would be better off just asking him kindly to retire.
Well, he's not going to leave the money on the table, I don't think.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, some people do. I don't think he would. I think he's going to try to work in the offseason to be like a big league pitcher. I don't have confidence in it. I hope he proves me wrong. I like your idea where he's going to be a reliever. Like,
yeah, from the get-go, make him a reliever in the offseason. Don't worry about being a starter, even if it looks like mathematically like you need him out there. Dana Brown, add other veteran pitchers in the offseason. Find guys that are being cut from bad teams that you'd rather take a flyer on it's if Lance McCullers is going to be an impactful player for the Astros next year, it's in a one-inning role.
Yeah, and look, I'm with you, too. Like, if he doesn't earn his spot on the roster, then I think you have to make the decision. It's on cost fallacy. We're going to have to cut ties. We're going to have to move on. But he's got the offseason to prove us wrong. He's got all of spring training to prove us wrong. A texter, this dude was trying to convince me that we have a better defense this year than last year. I says it looks worse. Doobie's not a gold glove. Pena's defense isn't as good. First base better, but because of Tony P, has Tony made this team better in any way? Asked the texter.
No, but I don't think Pena's defense is worse than last year.
I think the defense is far better, but I don't know if it's Perestica. I think it might be simply Jose Altuve, one of the worst infield defenders in all of baseball, is playing infield defense a lot less.
Yeah, it's more Dana Brown, honestly, than anything, with bringing in roster construction and making the decision to move Altuve out of second base.
Yeah, I think it's more roster construction than Tony Perestica.
And Jordan's not been in left, and he's fine. I think he is fine in the outfield, honestly, for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, he's not good out there, but it's lesser of two evils. Where does he hurt you less? He hurts you less there.
But no Jordan in left, no Altuve at second this year has been beneficial to the Astros defense.
Yeah. And Walker. Walker was way better defensively. And I know Walker hasn't had a great defensive year, but Walker still was better defensively this year than anything you had over there last year.
Not even close.
Yeah. Lance to pitching or bench coach. Why? Like, why would he, one, why would he want to? Two, why do you want him to do that? Like, I'm good with Murphy and Miller. I'm good with Omar Lopez. Like, I don't need McCullers to be coaching.
Yeah, he's either on this roster as a pitcher or he's gone and done with baseball.
Yeah.
At this point.
Yeah. All right, 713-780-3776. This Texans offense has been a talking point in our fine city. And something that I'm starting to notice, too, about the talking point about this Texans offense, it's becoming very divisive. People want to assign blame. Oh, it's Stroud's fault. Oh, no, it's not Stroud's fault. Can we just all come to the conclusion that it's all bad? Can we get there? 713-780-3776.
Hey, give everyone a hug over there.
They need it. They need it. They need they need some C.J. Stroud shoulder to cry on, I think. All right, 713-780-3776. Jeremy and Joe, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
This is ESPN 97.5.
Listening to Jeremy and Joe
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
1317 is being nice to us, and it makes me uncomfortable. Appreciate the kind words, 1317. As I said on X, the Texans are who I thought they were, and I'm not letting them off the hook. You call it X or do you call it Twitter?
Twitter.
I do too.
Same.
I'm always slow to conform. I'm defiant in that way, I guess.
When I can no longer in my browser type in twitter.com and it redirects me, maybe that will help.
Yeah, I can still put in the Twitter thing.
Yeah, so it's once they get rid of that function, but I know Elon doesn't want to give it up, and that's probably a good business model. But until I have to type x.com, I'm still going to call it Twitter.
Yeah.
Also, X is a stupid name.
It is pretty dumb. For like, it's a letter, really.
That's all it is. It's just a letter.
It's just a letter.
Why'd you pick that letter?
Well, you know, we know why.
Do we?
Yeah, because it's all of his other stuff, like SpaceX and.
Oh yeah, duh.
Yeah, yeah. And he's got a. Like, I don't know why. I don't get it. But he's
not much of an Elon guy, so I don't keep track of his day to day.
I mean, I don't really dabble in that sort of thing. That's not my world. I stick to sports. I shut up and dribble is what I do.
Your world is nerdy baseball stats and loving AJ Blue Ball.
Yeah, I'm not really. I don't do the aisle thing. I do baseball savant, IVBs. That's what I do. And also bad football offenses like the Houston Texans.
Is that what's just like your mornings like every day? Like wake up, shower, coffee, baseball savant?
I do look at Baseball Savant after every Astros game, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it is part of my daily prep to see what's happening. That's why I knew whenever Brian was saying Christian Walker doesn't have bat speed anymore, I knew he was a casual and doesn't keep up with the Baseball Savant, because Christian Walker can still touch like 75 miles per hour on his bat swing, by the way. It was early. You say he couldn't catch up to fastballs.
He wasn't catching up to fastballs.
His bat was slower. And I'm like, well,
I don't remember qualifying him about his bat speed. I just said he wasn't catching up to fastballs.
Joe, you remember that Homer Simpson when he backs up into the hedge? That little meme or gif or whatever they call it?
No. Oh, that,
yes,
yeah,
you do.
Yeah.
Okay, you're just not paying attention to me. You know what he does.
I didn't realize you were saying that.
That's what Brian. That's
I don't
what
watch
Brian
Simpsons.
Does.
Like, so outside it of that,
you don't need to watch the Simpsons.
Outside of that reference, I don't understand anything.
So this bad Texans offense. Here is what some other these other people, these talking heads around the NFL, and they were so kind to join our show today. Dan Orlovsky on the line with us. Dan, what are the issues do you see right now at the Houston Texans offense?
This is the same story as last year for Houston. It's got to get figured out. There has to be a good plan. There has to be good communication, and there has to be good execution by everybody on their offense, or he's going to continue to see the ground more than he sees touchdowns.
Look at that. He's dropping bars. He's going to see the ground more than he sees. Thank you, Dan, by the way.
Yeah, everything needs
HR&B
to be good.
Guest line.
Everything needs to be good. That's what I learned from that.
Yeah, here was Mina Kimes. Or here, Mina Kimes joining us, my bad. Mina Kimes, what are your thoughts on this Texans offense?
Even though it didn't look like they fixed the offensive line on paper, well, we're going to put more on our quarterback's plate, and mentally he's going to be able to solve it in a new scheme. It is not playing out that way early on for the reasons that Dan described. This is an operational issue. This is not just about the bad offensive line or running backs not picking up the blitz. It's the whole thing. It's the quarterback. It's the scheme. It's the players as well. They got to find a way to triage this by making life easier for Stroud. It feels like at the moment there are no easy buttons for him to push. Last night, Baker Mayfield had 11 passes behind the line of scrimmage. C.J. Stroud had two, right? Like, I understand not having Christian Kirk in there is maybe throwing a wrench in things, and of course Tank Dell's not healthy, but they cannot lean on longer developing plays the way that they have so far early in the season, even if Nico Collins is your best receiver downfield, because he is not surviving at this rate.
Thank you for joining us, Mina. It was very nice of Mina to listen to our show, too, to know what Dan had to say. That was kind of her.
Yeah, it was. I mean, look, you got them both on the line at the one time. They should be listening to each other. They do work together every day.
Yeah, and they added their own production, too, to the call.
Yeah,
they had music playing in the background.
Yeah.
None of our other guests do that. They were joining us on the HRMP guest line. But the easy buttons, operational issue, like this to me, this is a conversation that's already annoying me. Not so much talking about the bad offense or breaking down C.J. Stroud's play or the offensive line or Nick Haley individually. What's starting to annoy me is that there is a divisiveness about why the offense is having ailments. The offense is having, well, no, it's not Stroud at all. He's elite. It has to be everything else. Oh, it is Stroud. Look at him play bad whenever other things are involved. My stance on this right now, as we're 2 days after the second game of the NFL season and the Houston Texans season, is that the Houston Texans are bad offensively across the board. C.J. Stroud is playing nowhere near his best. The offensive line, I actually think, is better than last year, is still not very good. Nick Haley can't get Nico Collins the ball or push any easy buttons for C.J. Stroud. Outside of Stroud and Nico, there's no skill position player that's above average for their position. It's bad across the board.
It is bad across the board, and what I struggle with what Mina said is, and while I agree with her, is the easy button stuff. We're not past that yet. We have to hit the easy button for C.J. Stroud.
So this is a way bigger conversation. It opens up a can of worms. Maybe, like,
because that's concerning. Because and it shows that for the C.J. haters that maybe they were right in a lot of ways, but it's year three. We're still talking about easy buttons. Like, I don't
see, I think we're, how many quarterbacks in the NFL though are you not pushing easy buttons for? I think there's like two.
And even then you are. I mean, there's things that Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, those guys that like their offensive coordinators know what they like and what they can execute at a really high level that they rely on. Getting Nico Collins the ball is an easy button, right? Like that's one of the things she said there. They don't do that enough. There's not enough easy routes and plans for Nico Collins out there. Same thing with in terms of when C.J. Stroud's getting all this blitz that we talked about yesterday and Nico's running 20 yards down the field. It's useless. So they do have to find the easy stuff. But it doesn't feel like – it feels like that's all they – like it's the primary focus, that he's not really increasing his level of play that we all thought he was going to at this point. It feels very stagnant.
Yeah, see, I don't know if this is a great marriage. And, like, I don't want to, like, define it 2 games into the season. Like, it does need a runway. Like, it does need to marinate. Like, talked about it before the year. Like, this is going – they're not going to be in stride after 2 games. One, that never happens in a relationship. Two, this is a complex offense. Like, this is the Tom Brady offense. And I have a problem with that. I have a problem trying to turn C.J. Stroud into Tom Brady. I'll explain that next. We'll hear some from ESPN Dude. He'll join us later. Also, some stats some numbers with how putrid this offense is, because I'm a numbers guy, and I like to define things with numbers. And the numbers on the Texans' offense, they all stink. 713-780-3776, Jeremy and Joe, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Hey, Houston, the Walmart you thought you knew is now new. Who knew? Walmart is more than a half a billion items online. You can find a huge selection of items online that you can't find in stores. My wife and I, we're getting ready for a move. We're moving to a new house next week. And last night, we're sitting at home after work and was like, okay, these are all the things that we need to make to get ready for the move. Went to Walmart. We got all of it. Plus, they've got their groceries as well. And their grocery prices are the same in the store as they are for delivery. When it comes to feeding your family, hosting a tailgate, or throwing a party, think Walmart for all your grocery needs. And did you know Walmart can deliver in as fast as an hour? Fees and terms do apply. You can learn more at walmart.com.
Loaded, ready to rule. You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Back to the Veritex Community Bank Studios with Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Hey, Joe. I'm Jeremy. It's Jeremy and Joe. Brian's over there, too. Misidentifying Houston Cougars.
Thanks for the time, Jeremy.
713-780-3776. Turning CJ into Tom Brady, give me a break. That's exactly what they're trying to do. That's exactly what they're trying to do. Nick Caley was hired. Yes, he was the Rams OC under McVay. But do you think he's running the Rams offense, or do you think he's running vintage, antiquated New England Patriot offense? It is also reported, in fact, Stroud said this. This isn't even a report. This is CJ Stroud verbatim from a press conference saying they watch a lot of 2000 Patriot film. The talk about control at the line, him being able to change play. You know, who did that? Brady. They are trying to turn C.J. Stroud into Tom Brady. And the problem that I have with that is that there ain't ever going to be another Tom Brady. Love C.J. Stroud. I think C.J. Stroud has great football IQ. I think he's a very talented player that is not putting it together on film right now for a variety of reasons. Part of it is his fault. Part of it is other stuff's fault. But when you go listen to Tom Brady talk football, Tom Brady's like, yeah, I know what the defense is going to do before the defense does what it does. I watch so much film that I know them better than they know themselves. He talks about that the moment he takes the snap, his eyes are dropping to the safeties to confirm what he thought pre-snap and then changing his progressions based on the look that he gets. Sorry, but that ain't C.J. Stroud. That's why I think it is not a great marriage with Nick Caley, C.J. Stroud. Stroud has a ton of strengths. C.J. Stroud can be a winning quarterback. He's proven it. He's proven it in the NFL. Back-to-back divisional champion. Was unbelievable in his rookie year. But trying to pigeonhole him into Tom Brady ain't C.J. Stroud. It's a problem. It's an issue. I think it's a mismatch. It has shown itself in 2 weeks, and I hope I'm wrong because I'm not confident I am.
The problem is that this is what they did last year with Bobby Sloak, and that's why it's the same song and dance.
Football is football.
Is you should be trying to put an offense around a quarterback that best suits them. With Bobby Sloak, it was, all right, C.J., you're just going to run the Kyle Shanahan playbook, and whether that fits your strengths or weaknesses, it doesn't matter. That's what we're going to run. We're not going to do what C.J. Stroud does well. We're going to do what I think the offense should be, I being Bobby Sloak. And now they're doing the same thing. They're trying to turn him in to Tom Brady, run the Patriots offense. Why are you doing that? The Patriots offense only works with Tom Brady. We've talked about this. It didn't work for Josh McDaniels in any other situation. The only time it's really been successful is with Charlie Weiss and Brady Quinn at Notre Dame. Outside of that, it's been a dud in every college level, every pro level, and so far through 2 weeks, it hasn't been good enough. Why are you building an offense around a player that doesn't fit his identity? It's not a knock on C.J. Stroud, and it's holding C.J. Stroud back.
Yeah,
that's the problem. And it's the problem with it is it's an organizational decision to be okay with this. And also, it's a lie by D'Amico Ryans. D'Amico Ryans said in the offseason that they were going to fit this system around the players that they have and do what's best for them. That's not what this looks like. This does not look like even close to that. Mm-hmm. It looks like we are going to be the Patriots. This doesn't look anything like the Patriots anyways. Where is the Wes Welker in this offense?
It's supposed to be Kirk.
But he's not out there. Like, Wes Welker had concussions all the time. Where's the Julian Edelman of this offense?
Braxton Berrios.
Cool. Can't wait to see him on Sunday. Like, that's the plan. It's just we're going to fit these guys into this roster. It just doesn't make any sense. You have to build around what you do best. And outside of the Brady Moss here, that's the closest comp you can have to Stroud and Nico. And even that they're not doing that much.
No, their usage of Nico has been bad. And look, 2 weeks, can't write the whole book. But the first chapter or two ain't great. We'll see if it improves. Here are some of the numbers that I'm going to throw at you. The Texans' offense in 2024 averaged almost 22 points per game. Not good. Bottom half of the NFL, 19th out of 32. They're currently averaging 14 points per game. They're averaging a full touchdown and extra point. Less than they did last year, which is dead last in the NFL. Oh, what about yards per game? I got you. The Texans last year averaged almost 320 yards per game, 22nd out of 32 NFL teams. This year so far, 265.5 yards per game. That's 28th out of 32 teams. They have regressed in two games. Again, I get it, small sample, all of that, probably two playoff teams, we'll see. But the offensive numbers aren't as good as they were last year. They are 29th of 32 teams in points per drive. They average just over 1.5 point per drive. That is 29th out of 32 teams. That is ugly. How about like, Nick Haley's going to come to the Texans and he's going to bring exotic looks and motions and make it easier to identify the defense and do all of this great stuff. Well, you want to know the percentage of motion that the Houston Texans have run so far through two games of Nick Haley? They have ran 6.3% of their snaps in motion, which is the second lowest in the NFL. The second lowest usage of the motion is Nick Haley, who we thought he was bringing that to. Oh, well, they're going to do some play action, right? The play action is going to open up C.J. Stroud, which it might, but we wouldn't know it because the Texans are doing that fourth lowest of anybody else in the NFL. So this creativity that Kaylee's going to bring has been a lie to this point. Well, what about the predictability? You know, offensive coordinators should be unpredictable. That way it's hard to peg what they're doing. No, Nick Kaylee's also predictable. Cliche Kaylee. Under center, the Texans, when it designed pass under center 33% of the time, design run 67% of the time. They're tipping their pitches based on how they're lining up. When they go shotgun, they throw it 83% of the time. They run it out of the gun 17% of the time, unless it's third and one to go from the one and you hand it off to Nick Chubb out of the shotgun. I guess that was second down. So they've been bad statistically. One stat, the worst in the NFL. They have lacked any creativity after we were sold a bill of goods that they were going to be creative. They're predictable on top of it. C.J. Stroud looks worse than he did last year, and he looked worse than he did his rookie year last year. Nico Collins is not getting involved in any, like, they're force feeding it to Nico Collins because they can't draw up anything simple for Nico Collins. Two games, small sample. Relax, Branham. I hear what you're saying, but how should I have any sort of confidence in Nick Haley? Where is that coming from other than hope, quite frankly?
It's not, and that's why it's not necessarily a C.J. Stroud problem. He's the victim, basically, in this. It's Nick Haley. It's a first-time play caller, and he's trying to do these things. And you talk about those play-action numbers. I would almost guarantee you, Jeremy, if you go back and look, that doesn't represent what the Patriots were doing. All those numbers you listed off there, the play action, the motion, that's not what the Patriots were doing. Part of the reason why Tom Brady knew what everything was happening is because of motion, because they were moving Welker across the field. They were moving Edelman everywhere. They had a plan in place to make it easy to identify when it's zone, when it's man, all that stuff. Yeah. The Texans offense just isn't doing any of that. And again, you're right. It's 2 weeks, but as a first-time play caller, it's hard to believe that it's going to all of a sudden flip a switch. Now, the counterpoint to that would be that in his rookie season, the Texans were 0-2, and then they realized Tank Dell was on the roster. But even then, you go back and look at the statistics in the Colts game, I think he threw for over 300 yards, or threw for like 298 in that loss to the Colts in week two his rookie year. So the offense got better in week two. Now, we questioned if it was garbage time. I remember that conversation all the time happening on the show. But it did get significantly better in week three, and then it went from there. Still had its duds in the regular season. It's just hard to believe that a first-time play caller that's been this bad through 2 weeks is all of a sudden going to know the answers to the test.
Like, where would the confidence come from? Like, he's a first-time play caller, and it looks terrible. Terrible through two games. Like, Christian Kirk, hopefully, is the solution to all of this. Do you know the last time that Stroud threw for 300 yards in a game?
They showed this during the broadcast. But, Joe, you want to take a guess?
Jacksonville last year?
It's like 16 straight games, right?
So he threw,
that he's thrown less than 300 yards?
The first game that they played against Jacksonville, he threw for 345 yards, which was week four last year. The next week against Buffalo, he threw for 331 yards. That's the last time that he's done
which it. Which was week five last season.
Yikes. I mean, look, it's and I know fantasy doesn't matter for everything, but this is he's only had one game in the last season and two games in which he had over 20 fantasy points. That just encapsulates like the problems within the offense. They're not throwing the ball down the field. It adds to this stat here about not throwing for over 300 yards. And he's 13-24 in this game,
yeah.
207 yards.
Yeah.
I know the week before, Bijan Robinson had 100 receiving yards. But Michael Penix threw for 298 against the Buccaneers.
Yeah, look, I don't need you to throw for 300 yards, right? Like, that's not a number that
you don't
I need.
Need the exact number, but it is a good barometer
sure.
of the Texans' offense having success or not having it.
Oh, yeah.
And if he was throwing for 300 yards and they lost this game in a similar fashion, there would be other things we'd be pointing to within Nick Caley's offense that are the problem.
16 games, you were right. No, I agree with that. Like, it's 300 yards isn't always correlated with winning. But there's probably some correlation there with an offense that's clicking, that an offense that is doing some things. Because right now they're not. 713-780-3776. I went back. I watched the film on it. Like, there's some things that Stroud's doing that I'm not happy with. A lot of it's not his fault. Like, do I think C.J. Stroud is the biggest reason the offense is performing poorly right now? No. No. Probably three others before I get to C.J. Stroud. But that doesn't mean C.J. Stroud's playing well. That doesn't mean he's playing good. There's examples both sides. 713-780-3776. The text line is asking us, well, what does C.J. Stroud do well? What does he do well? I think he does a lot of stuff well. I'll tell you that on the other side. D'Amico, too. D'Amico was asked, where did Nick Caley improve in week two? We'll get to that as well. 713-780-3776. It's Jeremy and Joe on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.